This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What's up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast, the official podcast of Dirty South Soccer. My name, Eric Quintana. Sam Franco over there. Jason Smith is here, too. And this is the U.S. vs. Mexico preview podcast. But first, Sam Franco was honored and privileged to be joined by Raj. Was it Roger Bennett? Is it just Raj?
It is Roger Bennett is his full name. I didn't really feel comfortable going Raj just because, you know, that's something that he and Michael Davies have. I didn't want to break into that.
So you kept it formal, Roger.
I did. I went with Roger Bennett. Yeah, one half of the esteemed Men in Blazers, their show on Monday nights. It's kind of whenever Jeremy Roenick tells them they can go on air now that hockey's back.
Yeah.
So their show on Monday nights on the NBC Sports Network, the Men in Blazers show. Also, they have their own podcast. They really kind of hit the American scene last World Cup when they had Bob Lee's Panic Room when they still worked for ESPN, now, of course, with NBC. So, yeah, their show on NBC Sports Network on Monday nights. You can also catch them at menandblazers.com where their podcast is up. They're on iTunes, just like us now. And yeah. they're also on SoundCloud. So it was a really awesome interview. We touched on BlazerCon, which is sort of the Comic Con for soccer fans that they have introduced. It's going to be a great event. So we got plenty of information on that. We also talked a little Sepp Blatter, a little EPL. So it was a very awesome interview for me to do. So why don't you guys check it out?
And here it is, the Sam Franco's interview with Roger Bennett.
All right, ATLians, we have a special treat for you today, taking a trip to the crap part of Soho. He is half of the Men in Blazers. You can watch Men in Blazers show on Monday nights on the NBC Sports Network. Their podcast is on iTunes, SoundCloud, also accessible on meninblazers.com. He's a fan of America, Loretta Lynch, Everton, Pies, Guinness, and hopefully soon to be Atlanta United. Ladies and gentlemen, Roger Bennett. Roger, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on. I've actually got an Atlanta United scarf in my hands as we're speaking.
That is fantastic. That is so, so awesome. The first thing we want to get into here is BlazerCon. My dad's from Ecuador, so this is something that's right up my alley. I've had soccer instilled in me my whole life and a hatred of David Beckham for that goal he scored on us in 2006. But that's another story for another day. I wanted to give you a chance here to kind of let us know. BlazerCon sounds fantastic. It's going to be a meeting of just soccer royalty. You've got Bob Lee, Rebecca Lowe, Ray Hudson, a host of others. Also, you guys just announced a panel with Katie Nolan, where she'll talk about the state of the women's game, featuring Allie Krieger, Heather O'Reilly, and Becky Sauerbrunn. So, BlazerCon, just give us the spiel.
It is a symbol, I guess, of America falling in love with football, but also world football falling in love with America, as you guys know well in Atlanta with Atlanta United. That we've been doing our show for the past 5-6 years now, and what we wanted to do was to let off all of our rockets all at once and invite some of the leading thinkers who we love from global football to come to America, come together with people from across the country, football fans, people who've fallen truly madly deeply in love with the sport in recent years, and have a chance for the fans to come together with the people who run Liverpool Football Club, Manchester City, Southampton, the gentleman that runs the whole Premier League, the CEO Richard Scudamore is coming over to give his first address to the American audience with Rebecca Lowe. We have the commissioner of the Bundesliga, Christian Seifert, coming over. We have the manager of Everton, Roberto Martinez, coming over, as well as many of the people you mentioned. I'm particularly excited about the U.S. Women's National Team members who are coming, and also some of the MLS owners, including Joe Roth of Seattle, are going to come into town and talk about a vision for MLS. Now it's 20, what will it look like when it's 40, the differing vision. So there's a whole host of minds, a whole host of angles, domestic, American soccer, women's soccer, global soccer, and anyone that's interested in just the changing tectonic plates of the sport should come and join us in New York City, November 13th, 14th. We'd love to have them.
Now, for the big fans, obviously this is going to be something that they're going to love, but why would maybe the passive or just now getting into it soccer fan enjoy BlazerCon?
Well, there's a massive audience right now who've really fallen truly, madly, deeply in love with the sport over the past couple of years. If you watch the World Cup 2014, were thrilled by it. The Women's World Cup this summer, and became entranced with it, and have started to engage with the Premier League, the US men, who are hopefully going to play to victory against Mexico at the weekend. It's really targeted at those kind of individuals. And what's fascinating to us is that the owners of these teams, the managers of these teams, the players on these teams want to meet the American fan base. It's a bit like Adam Silver, Jerry Jones and Gary Bettman paratrooping into London to engage European hearts and minds. So we're just delighted by the response from across the country, and hope that some of the Atlantan soccer fans will come to New York on November 13th, 14th and join us.
Yes, November 13th, 14th, Brooklyn Expo Center. There will be football, there will be beer, and most importantly in my book, there will be pies.
Oh, so there'll be a lot of pies.
That sounds fantastic. I did have some other little things I wanted to get to you with while we were on air. First of all, the big story in world football right now, Sepp Blatter. He has been provisionally suspended for 90 days, along with Michel Platini, a guy that many people thought would be his successor. So the corruption continues. I find it laughable that he gets a 90-day suspension, because that brings him back with a little under a month before the new election happens anyway. But as you guys like to talk about on the Men and Blazers podcast, the big collateral damage in all of this has been Chuck Blazer's cats.
Yeah, no one's thinking about the cats. I mean, it's a farce. And unfortunately, unlike a comedic farce, which you can laugh at, all you can do here is feel your bile rising up, because the honest truth that he's been put on 90-day provisional parole in the wake of McDonald's and Visa and a whole host of the other American sponsors of the World Cup making a stand finally and demanding his ouster. It really doesn't matter whether it's 90 days, whether it's permanent, whether it's Blatter, whether it's Platini. The whole of FIFA is rotten. The system, it's like Spectre in a James Bond movie. The individuals who voted in Blatter, who would have voted in Platini, are all still in place. The gentleman who's taken over temporarily, probably permanently until the new elections, is he Haitu? It's like the Who song, new boss, same as the old boss. So it's rotten to the core. America's played an unbelievable role in finally standing up to this organization. But the notion of change, the notion of truly transforming it, unfortunately, we are way, way, way from that. This is just, it's like Chicago machine politics, and you understand how they work better than I do.
Yes, on our podcast, we selfishly requested that Loretta Lynch be Atlanta United's first coach. But unfortunately for us, she has much more important work to take care of here. So we will let her get to that. I also wanted to ask you, you guys do such a great job on the Men and Blazers show and Men and Blazers podcast about kind of mixing the analysis and the comedy. What makes the EPL the best league in the world, in Roger Bennett's opinion?
The narrative. I mean, you're asking me on a great day today. Jurgen Klopp, the former Dortmund manager, signed on to lead Liverpool to who knows where. It's not the best football in the world, as the Champions League has proven, where English teams have struggled of late. But you cannot beat it for just the elite athletic moments, and then hours and hours of telenovela-worthy kind of soap opera storylines, with Chelsea in sudden freefall, with Arsenal fantastic one week and so brittle the next, with this Liverpool project. It's been in reverse for so long, but the dreams that underlie it are so massive, and the characters, heroes, villains. I mean, it's really like Games of Thrones, but played out by 22 men wearing polyester and cleats. It's wonderful stuff.
Unfortunately, Dick Advocaat just fell out the moon door, but again, we'll leave that for another day as well. I love the characters that you guys go into on the Men and Blazers show, just the characters from the managerial perspective. Louis van Gaal with Louis van Gaal's army, you know, Arsene Wenger and Jose Mourinho getting into knot fights. Where does Jurgen Klopp fit into that?
He's a man bear. He's enormous. I mean, he's another never bald, another hair transplant, exactly what we needed, another follically challenged manager. He's openly had a hair transplant. He's a tactical genius who lifted a team once before until they were exhausted and worked out by their opponents. He's got a lot to prove. Liverpool have a lot to prove. His press conferences are going to be exercises in unbelievable charisma. Few managers have more. He loves to bear hug his players. He's not averse to giving them a good slap on the side of the head at times. He's a wonderful addition. Well done, Premier League writers. Well done. A wonderful addition to this kind of Robert Altman-esque ensemble cast that is the Premier League.
Now, we've got USA-Mexico coming up this weekend. I just wanted to get one last thought from you on this game. How do you see it playing out? And is Jurgen Klinsmann in trouble if U.S. doesn't win this game?
It's hard to tell exactly how it's going to play out. It's going to be a fantastic occasion, like any Mexico-USA clash. This one's being played in the Rose Bowl. It's going to be 60-40, they think, Mexican fans to U.S. fans. It's going to be loud. Everything is going to feel at stake. It's going to feel seismic. It's going to feel epic. It's going to feel almost Armageddon-esque in the build-up. Everything's felt massive. Jurgen Klinsmann must go, says Landon Donovan, if he loses. I mean, ultimately, the result doesn't mean as much rationally as it does emotionally. Rationally, the winner goes to the Confederations Cup, a kind of warm-up for the World Cup in 2017. You could say, actually, just exhaust your players rather than giving them a summer off to prepare for the World Cup season ahead. But emotionally, it feels like it means everything. To some degree, it does mean everything because the US have so few big games to play in between World Cups. So every massive game does feel like a referendum. Both teams are hampered. The Mexicans by injury and transitions between coaches, the US by a run of very dodgy results. It's honestly too close to call, but whatever happens, Jurgen Klinsmann will be the coach of the United States of America for a while to come yet.
Roger Bennett, thank you so much for joining us again. BlazerCon, November 13th and 14th at the Brooklyn Expo Center in New York. There will be football, there will be beer, and there will be pies. Hopefully when Atlanta United gets a little more into things, we can have you back on and we can talk a little bit more Atlanta with you.
Hopefully I'll be able to come to Atlanta. I love your city. I cannot wait to be there. And thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you, Roger.
Yeah, and once again, thank you to Roger Bennett for joining us. It was a really, really awesome time. And don't forget BlazerCon in Brooklyn, New York, November 13th and 14th. And it's going to be a really awesome event. Also, check out menandblazers.com. You can watch the Men and Blazers show Monday nights on NBC Sports Network. And their podcast is on iTunes, SoundCloud, and, of course, at menandblazers.com. So that was great. But, guys, we have some business to get to, don't we, Eric?
We do. I mean, moving towards the U.S.-Mexico game, that's Saturday night. And I was thinking of, like, a phrase or a word that I could use to describe this game, at least from my perspective. And I thought cautious optimism. Because I ultimately think we're going to win the game, but it's kind of the way I think Georgia and Georgia Tech fans should feel going into every game after last week's performances. just because you don't know exactly what you're going to get, but you're kind of hoping for the best.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's not a game where you can feel super great about it from either perspective. From the Mexico perspective, you know, they just hired a new coach. He's not actually going to take over until November. So they're kind of in flux right now. The U.S., Jurgen Klinsmann is pretty entrenched in this job, but he's gotten probably more flack at this point in his position as U.S. head coach than at any other time during his tenure. So it's definitely an uneasy, uneven competition. There's definitely a lot riding on this game from both sides, you know, for Mexico to get into the Confed Cup as well as for the U.S. But I think for the U.S., it's more about kind of stopping this downward momentum that they've been on. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I was going to say, saying that these teams are in flux is a very generous way of describing where both of these teams are. These are two perennial powers of CONCACAF that seem at any given moment right now. So say we were doing, you know, I mean, you could say we were doing the Gold Cup again, but if we were to play a CONCACAF tournament right now, I'm not convinced that either of these teams is going to do all that well, especially if Costa Rica is healthy again. So this is a really odd time in the tenure of Jurgen Klinsmann, but particularly in the sort of like the talent pool for El Tri is really good right now. Like they have a ton of talented players, but somehow the results on the field are just pretty abysmal for them. Take that. And, you know, combine it with the fact that Jurgen Klinsmann has never lost to Mexico. And, you know, yeah, I'm with I'm with Eric, you know, cautious optimism. Like, I'm going to the UGA Tennessee game this weekend, and I'm like, yeah, cautious optimism.
Hey, maybe, me too.
Right. It's like, maybe it'll be okay. Maybe not. It might be okay.
Klinsmann hasn't lost to Mexico as a coach or as a player.
He it's 10
Germany
it's
as well.
10-0 as a coach and player between him and Mexico. But I just think it's weird that we talk about Mexico being in flux. We know that we're in flux, but Mexico, they just came off winning the Gold Cup. So you'd think they'd be riding this wave of momentum into this match, but yet they just, you know, hired their new coach, and you still don't exactly know what's going on in terms of who they're going to put on the field because of the injuries and, you know, Giovanni Dos Santos, who, from what I've gathered, would come off the bench. It's just weird that we're talking about Mexico, who literally just came off winning the Gold Cup in that way.
Yeah, I mean, you could go back to your college football analogy, though, Eric, and be like, this is kind of like winning an SEC championship against, like, Arkansas and not Bama or LSU. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it counts. But, like, really, you're kind of in flux. You beat Jamaica. Love it for you, but, you know, temper your expectations.
Well, yeah, no, I totally agree that everybody needs to kind of step back a little bit. I will say that from the U.S. perspective, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann, as I said earlier, just under fire probably more than he's ever been. But that's just from the outside. Internally, it feels like Sunil Gulati, president of the U.S. Soccer Federation, has backed Jurgen Klinsmann. And it's almost like it's not because he wants to. It's because he has to at this point.
Well, cash.
I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because the next thing I was going to go to was whether Klinsmann's job was on the line after this game. And I think most of us think, you know, as much as we would like to see him go, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but as much as we'd like to see him go, it looks like he's probably going to stay no matter what. However, I bring that up because in 2010, after Bob Bradley's World Cup finish, the next year they lost 4-2 and had a bad game against Panama in the following Gold Cup, and he was fired. He had just signed an extension after that World Cup. This is sort of the same scenario for Jurgen Klinsmann coming up now, although the Gold Cup has passed. This game, I think, could be that deciding factor.
I wish that were the case, but, you know, as you guys heard just a minute ago in my interview with Raj there, he thinks that Jurgen Klinsmann is fully entrenched in this job, regardless of what happens in this game. And this is a huge game just because it's USA-Mexico. Nothing else has to be talked about there. It's USA-Mexico. It's USA's biggest rival. Quite frankly, it's one of the biggest rivalries on the world soccer level. It's right up there with Germany, Netherlands, Argentina, Brazil, although at least in the United States we don't need giant fences guarding fans from going into the stadium, and in Argentina we don't have fans cutting a hole in the tunnel and spraying in like pepper spray. But it is still a very, very nasty rivalry. We know about Landon Donovan, we'll just say, urinating on the field at the Azteca.
Yep.
We know about just a whole bunch of different things that have happened in this rivalry. So it's a huge game. And Jurgen Klinsmann, I feel like he needs to feel the pressure. And I think what Landon Donovan said is kind of spot on. You know, if all the players are constantly getting evaluated after each and every game, and all the players that have that pressure on them, then the manager should feel that pressure too.
I think that I'm glad that Landon said what he said. I wish somebody else other than Landon was saying that.
Right, because it comes across as kind of sour.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got the quote right here. The reality is that now, anywhere else in the world, if this coach had those results and they lost this game against Mexico, they'd be fired. I think if Jurgen wants to hold all the players to that standard, then he has to be held to that standard too.
And I think that's an okay quote. But my thing to Landon is this: like, you're like, the circumstances. One, the U.S. soccer is not necessarily, it just isn't every other soccer power in the world. You know, it's a different situation. We're still trying to act as if we've arrived, but we still haven't quite arrived yet. We own CONCACAF pretty well with Mexico, but for the most part, that's been pretty, like, we dream of greater things than just owning CONCACAF. And so my thing in that is, and this is my ideal, if we lost to Mexico, and say, I think for any change to happen, it'd have to be a pretty embarrassing loss. So say that it gets really out of hand, like 4-0, like, you know, nightmares, like, right. Lord bless us and keep us. That doesn't happen, knock on wood. But like, let's say that really does happen, that we just get run out of the building in the Rose Bowl. If that were to happen, the best thing, I think, action they could take is to let Jurgen, and this is never going to happen, but like, I would love to see Jurgen Klinsmann back off head coaching and go to technical director.
Jurgen, yes.
Yes, just be the face of American soccer, be the ambassador of the game, be the gadfly in all of our complacency about MLS and FIFA calendar, you know, like really give some good quotes to like just make people angry. But for the most part, direct youth soccer, direct our academies, get player development going, and then hire someone else to come in and do the managerial stuff that, like, your split time between both of those roles is obviously creating problems and has been creating problems since you decided to not take Landon Donovan to the World Cup. So, like, just let – if the egos were gone, that to me would be the most sensible option. I don't think that's remotely possible because of, one, the cash involved in this transaction, and two, the egos involved in this transaction.
I remember thinking, as soon as I read it, I just thought, man, how much does Donovan hate Klinsmann? Just going back to that World Cup snub.
Stupid email or whatever, or tweet. Yeah, it was a tweet after, you know, Donovan didn't make the team. It's like, dude, you gotta show a little more class than that. I mean, this is Landon Donovan, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, United States soccer player of all time. He's definitely the best United States outfield player. The U.S. has had some really good goalkeepers over the years, so you can throw them in the mix as well. But he's the best U.S. outfield player we've ever seen. And for, you know, Klinsmann's family to treat him like that, I don't think Klinsmann's son would have said something or tweeted something so dumb if those weren't the feelings that his dad had.
Right.
So it just puts you in a very interesting position, and it's funny that I'm saying all this while I'm wearing my Jurgen Klinsmann Tottenham jersey. So I don't know how I am trying to be impartial here, but no, it's a very valid point. He should not be the coach, a lot of people think. You know, he should be this technical director. He's much better at the talent evaluation. He's much better at that kind of stuff. Like you said, Jason, academies and things like that. He just, for some reason, he lets his sort of ability, and a lot of people have this problem, you know, like the reason that some people say that Michael Jordan never would have been a great head coach because he wouldn't have been able to understand when players were going through struggles. It's like, well, why can't you just do what I did? And I feel like Jurgen Klinsmann and Landon Donovan's biggest disconnect was that they had different attitudes. You know, Landon goes in a sabbatical and Jurgen Klinsmann's like, I would have never done that. I don't understand it. So that might be why Jurgen just isn't this great. Look at Jose Mourinho. He was not a good soccer player at all. Rafa Benitez, kind of the same way. Some of these guys weren't great players, but they've turned into great coaches. And I think with the great player, sometimes you really get that disconnect of not being able to understand why certain players struggle or go through certain things that you never had to deal with.
What's the old adage? Those that can't do, teach.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna put you guys on the spot. So, assuming the U.S. loses this game in any way, 2-1, 4-0, does Klinsmann lose his job?
No, he will keep this job.
Yeah, I'm the same way. No, doesn't lose it.
All right, well, let's move on to the inclusions and the exclusions of the 23-man roster. Were there any thoughts of who he left off, who he, you know, decided to bring on? I know for me, I still... Maybe it's just because I have no idea why Alvarado is in the lineup. And
preach.
As much as I don't wish injury on anyone, I wish there was some circumstance in which Klinsmann was forced to play anyone other than Alvarado.
What I don't understand with the center backs, and I completely agree with you, Alvarado is just not very good. The best pairing of center backs that the USA has had under Jurgen Klinsmann seems to be Omar Gonzalez and Matt Beisler. And I know Beisler is in the squad, and I know Gonzalez kind of had an up and down, or he's having an up and down year, but I just don't understand why the two center backs that have formed the best pairing haven't gotten any time on the field together basically since the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, if you were going just based on, like, in-form performances, first off, if we were doing that, Benny Failhopper would be in this team.
Yep.
He's not. As would Sebastian Legette, which also, by the way, and we'll get to this later on, but, like, if you look at maybe some proposed lineups out there, it looks like a 4-4-2 diamond with Fabian Johnson and Yedlin playing in the midfield wings again, which is stupid. But if you had Sebastian Legette in this team to play that role, you have Fabian Johnson at left back, and then a huge big hole is now fixed in this lineup. But I'm with you, Sam, in that, like, the center back pairing is just maddening, mainly because you have – I don't think Jeff Cameron's in the squad. I've seen the roster, but I don't think he's on the 23, right?
I think he is. I'll look it up right now, but I think he is.
Okay, to me, if I'm looking at the squad that they have right now, the most tried, and if you're going to do what I think they're going to do tactically and just sort of like sit and let Mexico sort of hold the ball and try to counterattack, if you're going to do that, then to me, the two people that work out the best, if you had fullbacks that had any skill set whatsoever in this team, would be to put Ream and Cameron at center back. Two tried and trusted, tried and tested British Bulldog type defenders who just sit there and can stop things from happening. Like, because, you know, to me, Tim Ream has been really consistent and is really good, whereas you put somebody like Alvarado back there, and every time the ball comes near him, we're all just holding our breath. Like, the Alvarado experiment has failed and failed worse than most Klinsmann experiments up to this point.
I think he just likes him so much because of his speed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the only reason he has him on the team. Otherwise, I mean, he is riding the bench on his own club, Club America.
Yeah,
I don't even know why you bring him up at that point. If he can't make the starting lineup on a regular basis at his own club, why have you then brought him to represent the national team? I'm like terrified that he's going to start.
Yeah, and it's like, hell, if he has pace and he's a defender, put him at fullback. We need fullbacks. We have no fullbacks in this team. There's no left back, right back pairing that makes sense right now.
I think just because of the experience and because of his time against Mexico, I mean, wouldn't you think just on the roster that of defenders that they've called up that DeMarcus Beasley probably makes the most sense at left back just because he's got that experience?
Yeah, dude, I think Beasley's starting this game, which is crazy. He's like 50 years old.
Yeah, that is it is kind of nuts. But, you know, obviously the U.S. soccer fan and you want Beasley to go out there.
That is
have
true.
The best 90 minutes he's ever had. But it just doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
Well, it'll definitely give him a better out than the penalty shootout from last time, you know, that was supposed to be his swan song. That would be nice to see the good old Beasley go out on a game that was actually important and was a victory.
Another thing about this lineup, I see Jonathan Spector in it. I'm like, what? Like, where did that come from?
Well,
he hasn't been in the U.S., you know, equation for years.
I can't imagine we'll actually see him on the field. I think that's one of those, like, fill the roster type role. But I would have used someone else for that, but that's just me.
But it ain't just you. I think it's all three of us.
Yeah. Honest to God, and this, I will continue to say this probably until 2018. Right now, if you had to put a gun to my head and tell me what the best center back pairing in the U.S. is right now, it would straight up be Cameron Carter-Vickers and Matt Miazga. But they're qualifying for the Olympics right now, so we can't use them. But, like, I love both of those guys way more than I love anybody we have on this roster right now.
And so, I think down the line, that is totally correct. But just for this game, for the experience, I know, again, I hate to keep going back to the same point, but during the World Cup, Gonzalez and Beasler were pretty much a wall in some of those games. A lot of the goals, you know, weren't their fault. But unfortunately, Omar Gonzalez seems to have been broken by Jurgen Klinsmann at this point, a little bit. Which really stinks. But that's my whole point, though. After the World Cup was over, those guys didn't play together in the U.S. equation at all. So I just don't know what Jurgen Klinsmann's kind of end game on all this is.
There's not much more real experimentation you can do, although I have seen, going back to your point, Jason, have seen some mock lineups where they're putting Fabian Johnson at midfield. And
I think that totally happens, by the way.
Well, I like that. I think it would just take us back to the whole, why are you, this is the game we were experimenting for. Why are you still experimenting for this game? Because as much as we've seen it work with his club team, we have not seen him specifically with this team do in that role.
I think the problem is that his best, like, he's the U.S.'s best left back probably, but he's also the U.S.'s best left midfielder right now.
He's their best player. He's their best player right now, in my opinion. There's no one that's been more consistent than him.
And that's the thing. I mean, you've got to put your best players in the position to you know, give you the best chance. If just using a personal example, Antonio Valencia has kind of become a backup right back for Manchester United. But even when he was playing right mid and right back some for Manchester United throughout the years, they put him in the Ecuador lineup. And he's their number 10. So, I mean, while it might not be his best position, you've got to put your best players in positions to impact the game. And I think by putting Fabian in the midfield, that's what Jurgen's trying to do.
You're also probably going to see Yedlin in the midfield as well, I suspect. I suspect you'll see sort of like a 4-1-3-1 thing that we've been running. But I think Yedlin plays right wing and Fabian plays left wing, in all honesty.
Oh man, it would just be tough to kind of, like, I as much as I would want to see it too, I would have liked to have seen it last, you know, in against Brazil or against Peru or something, to see what it looked like on this, you know, on this with the squad. But I don't know.
Now, I will say this, though. If you're thinking about constructing a team where you want as much defensive cover as you possibly can, if you play a 4-4-2 diamond or something that looks kind of like that, and you have our best left back and arguably our best right back sitting up in the midfield, like, that does construct a little bit more of, like, you got a lot of cover there on the edges. You know, like, you're really going to be challenging Mexico to go at either a Jermaine Jones or a Michael Bradley playing in the middle. You know, like, they're going to have to break those guys down. And, you know, the problem is, if you put Ventura Alvarado in the center, that's a gaping hole in the middle of the field. And your edges are fine, you know, which is good because Mexico tends to use wingbacks. Your edges will be great, but the middle of the field is going to be a disaster.
What? Yeah, I've got a question for the two of you guys. You know, I'm moving up to the forwards. I know that, you know, you kind of got two spots for three guys there. And Zardes, Altidore, and Dempsey. I know that Jurgen has been playing Zardes out wide, and I think even at the LA Galaxy, he started to move kind of more towards that role. But the kid's a pure striker. I mean, that's what he's been doing. That's what he first came up as with the LA Galaxy. And quite frankly, I think a 1-2 punch of a Zardes and Altidore up top would be pretty potent if they were both playing well. I mean, Zardes, and they do things so differently, you know, the back-to-goal style of Jozy Altidore, whereas Zardes is going to try and run at you and beat you with pace. I really like it when you can have two contrasting strikers like that. I know that doesn't leave any room for Clint Dempsey, but quite frankly, the way Dempsey's been playing, why should it?
Well, I can't get around the fact that I heard Matt Doyle, MLSsoccer.com, talk about this the other day, but he doesn't – Zardes, I don't think in the however many goals he has, I think 30 goals, he hasn't had one breakaway goal. One-on-one with the keeper type of goal, which at least for this game, that's why I would want to see him as a midfielder, so that it's not something new to him. It's something
that makes sense.
More comfortable to where he's shooting either from outside the box or he's shooting around players or something like that, and it's not a one-on-one situation where we have, you know, the next Wondolowski who, you know, seems to miss everything because he gets blocked or whatever. But you don't want to kill the confidence by putting him in a position where, you know, that he's not, I mean, not that he's not used to playing forward, but I just wouldn't want to, I wouldn't expect him to, you know, try to go one-on-one or try to beat the defender to go one-on-one with the keeper or something like that.
I'd also put it this way, you know, another point to that is to say that as much as I have hoped that Jozy and Jozy would be great pairing together, that's always been the imagined pairing, but it never really works out
really
that well.
Doesn't.
They're never like lights out. And the big thing is that, look, you say what you want about this list of forwards. The best goal scorer in a U.S. jersey right now is Jordan Morris, and there's really not even a close second. And then behind that is Clint Dempsey. Clint Dempsey doesn't score goals when he's wearing green, but when he's wearing when he's wearing red, white, and blue, Clint can find the net somehow. And I love that about him, but like right now of this list of people, the only guy I am sure we'd get a goal out of if he were up front and got the ball is Clint Dempsey. Jozy could show up and hit like five goals in 20 minutes, or Jozy could score up and literally hit the
please
ball
God,
into the stands for 90
God,
minutes.
He is the riddle wrapped inside of the enigma, man. It just,
yes.
It is so hard to figure out Altidore. I think, you know, he was doing so well at AZ Alkmaar. Then he goes to Sunderland, and that kind of broke him. And now that he's back in the MLS, you know, we'll see long term what happens with him. But yeah, he was just, again, you know, that I think that one moment for the U.S. before that Confed Cup, or not before, during that Confed Cup run where they beat Spain, where Charlie Davies and Jozy Altidore were playing so well off of each other. Charlie Davies' car accident might have been the most damaging thing to U.S. soccer's prospects to happen in a long time.
True.
So some may be wondering where Jordan Morris is. He's obviously with the U23s in their Olympic qualifying tournament. Bobby Wood, I didn't look all too hard, but Bobby Wood's the other exclusion that I thought was kind of disappointing, because I know as coming off someone that comes off the bench, he's that work hard, just 100%, 100 miles an hour type of guy that you would want coming off the bench.
I mean, I'd agree with you there, and I think the other guy that really fits that mold is DeAndre Yedlin. So if you can imagine, I think what was so effective against Holland in particular when we beat Holland in that friendly back in the day was to see the U.S. sort of gut it out for 60 or 70 minutes, and then you bring on DeAndre Yedlin, fresh legs, can run faster than pretty much anybody on the field, even when they were fresh. against tired defending legs, a Yedlin to Wood hookup was really effective. So guys like that that are pacey, yeah, like I don't know. That to me just says that this formation is not really all that much about playing the wingers, or at least Jurgen thinks he has the wingers he needs in Fabian, Yedlin, and Jazzy, because I thought Wood would be on this team too, and instead we get Alan Gordon.
Yeah. Johansson, another one that is left off, but he's got, I guess, some personal stuff going on in Iceland, and I think he's also injured.
I think he's hurt too.
Yeah. So I wanted to move on to, aside from the fact that, at least I think, that Klinsmann's job's on the line, and that obviously a position in the Confederations Cup is obviously on the line. How important is this game just for the confidence of U.S. soccer moving forward? Because we basically, ever since the Germany-Netherlands games, we have just been in a funk.
Yeah, I mean, I think that from a narrative perspective, like quote-unquote the narrative that the media would try to play on this thing, I think, yeah, kind of it's important, but for the most part, I don't buy that kind of stuff. Like, I think, yes, it's good to beat Mexico and keep Mexico from the Confederations Cup and for you to get that extra prep, whereas Mexico doesn't. And people talk about the Confederations Cup like it's a big deal. But, I mean, I would be curious to see a stat of, like, you know, past World Cup winners or semifinalists that have come out of, that have, like, either missed the Confed Cup or have played in it and done badly. Because sometimes, to me, like, yes, having a tournament a year ahead is good, but there's no substitute really for having a good run as close to the World Cup as possible and being in good form going into the tournament. I think going to the Confed Cup is probably going to be a part of that, because you could then take a Jordan Morris or a, hell, even you could take Cameron Carter-Vickers and Matt Miazga and, like, break them in against the world's best competition. Not really concerned about winning the whole thing, but, like, just wanting to get good experience under their belt before going to Russia in 2018. And from that perspective, yeah, it gives you lots of opportunities. But, like, the loss of confidence thing can easily be built back up with a Gold Cup win or a couple of wins in key friendlies. Like, that thing is mainly, like, that is, like, you know, is being grown and pushed by probably overreactions rather than just, you know, simple, what do we need?
Look, the U.S. is going to have plenty of opportunities over the next couple of years leading into the World Cup in Russia to test themselves. You know, they've got that Centenario Copa America that still looks like it's going to happen. So, I mean, I think there are plenty of different ways that this team can improve and get better against good competition. But I also don't think that anything could stand in for playing in the venues that – our World Cup venues, and it's just really hard to replicate that. Also playing against teams that are going to be at the World Cup. So I really think the Confed Cup's important. I also think that any time you play Mexico, you should be playing to win. This isn't an experiment type game. This is USA-Mexico, again, one of the biggest rivalries in world soccer, and it needs to be treated as such, and the U.S. needs to go out and win this game.
Well, we shall see how it all pans out Saturday. 6:30 Pacific time. What's that, 9:30 here on the East Coast?
That is correct. I will be watching on my cell phone on the way back from Knoxville, Tennessee.
I was going to say, you guys have an enjoyable weekend. I'll be, you know, biting my nails all Saturday and possibly Saturday night. Who knows? I'm hoping for the best, but again, cautious optimism from myself.
Guys, don't forget BlazerCon. You should check it out up in New York. Also, if you want to hear more from the Men in Blazers, check out meninblazers.com and watch their show on NBC Sports Network on Monday nights. So, again, thanks to Roger Bennett for joining us. And, man, just love doing these. And, guys, let's do it again real soon.
Yeah.
Again, if you want to follow us on Twitter, Dirty South Soc, Dirty South SOC, and follow us on Facebook, facebook.com, Dirty South Soccer. Bookmark the website, dirtysouthsoccer.com. And until next time, we'll see you guys later.
Hashtag Mouths of the South.
We out.